On this week's episode of The Freenoter, we talk about slides, what the audience looks at, and why.
And why do they? And we're also going to look at the work of Joey Coleman and what he has to teach us about slides.
And because this show is all about slides, we reveal our newest Freenoter drink, the slide car.
I love the slide car. All that and more on this week's episode of The Freenoter. All right, so this week we are talking about slides.
Slides!
Slides.
But not the playground type, right? I mean, like, whee!
Well, maybe the playground type. I don't know. You know, so I think, first of all, we have to say that we are not... I hear you drinking your Mai Tai.
It's a slide tie.
A slide tie. I know. We're not in the same location today.
Not even close.
We are so many... far apart. Oh my goodness. Do I hate the time zones?
Yes. I am smack dab in the middle of the Pacific Ocean in beautiful Hana, Hawaii.
I've never been to Hana, Hawaii. I didn't even know there was a Hana, Hawaii.
There is a Hana. It's on Maui, and it's famous because of the road to it. Apparently, the road to Hana is a big deal, and I took the road to Hana to get to Hana, and here I am in Hana, Hawaii.
And that was a Bob Hope, Bing Crosby movie.
I know, exactly. That's like, honestly, like the first time someone said, "Oh, the road to Hana," I'm like, Bob Hope, Bing Crosby? Like, no. But apparently, I mean, not even apparently, because I have been on it. It is the windiest road. Huh. In the United States, according to my excellent driver, Canale, also known as Cuz, because he's related to apparently 80% of the people in Hana, Hawaii.
In the world, if he's Cuz.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And this was true, actually, because literally, like, 80% of the people we passed, like, called him out by name as we were driving along. This, yeah. And so it's this amazing kind of cliff hugging road that like dips into waterfalls, and you know, just it's this amazing, it's amazing trip to the through the rainforest of Maui. So, but it means that my sound doesn't sound as good, but my view is awesome.
I think you sound lovely.
Oh,
so good. we're gonna talk about slides today, and I have a very distinct point of view about slides, and I think you do too.
I do.
And I think our points of view probably merge here, but in my line of work, I have to show data. I show a lot of data, and so I have to show slides. I have to show a visual representation of that data. And you know, one thing I always like to say is that numbers are not just funny looking letters. And if you're going to show numbers, you have to think differently. You have to think differently. You have to explain them differently. You have to give a context, because I can tell you, no matter how smart your audience is, they don't see them the same way that you do. You know, a lot of speakers would love to be able to go without slides, but they are a crutch, I think, for a lot of us.
Okay, but do they, though? That's my first point, was like, I don't know that speakers actually do want to go without slides, because as you just were saying, like, slides can be a crutch for the speaker who is not well prepared.
Yeah, I think so. And I think when I'm giving a talk that I haven't given before, which is 90% of my talks, I'm relying on the slides to kind of to tell me what's next, right? And so I have to say I do rely on them as a crutch.
I agree, and I believe, and the same. I think you're not human if you haven't used a slide deck to be like, oh right, that's what I was talking about. But it's a fairly poorly constructed deck. If you are surprised by the slide that comes next, so I really believe in. You know, particularly when a talk is new, I will fully admit that when a talk is new, I need the slides to kind of help inculcate that slide into that talk into my brain. But the more that I give it, the more that I start to drop slides out of it, because there are fewer and fewer slides that I actually need, quote unquote, to help move it forward. But I really think that if you're going to use slides, And we can talk about like when should you use slides and when you shouldn't. I think you should at least know your deck well enough to the fact that you're not like, oh, right, I was talking about this now. I mean, you should really be thinking about your slides as part of how you, I mean, at least this is what I do. I use slides as part of how I build the talk, and the building of the slides is part of how I put the talk in my head. So I can say with confidence that even though, you know, in the early days of a new talk, I use a lot of slides and I have them there. They really are just more of kind of like a safety blanket for me, because I believe in building the talk story first and not slide first, which, by the way, makes it very easy to recover if for some reason you can't use your slides, like a projector fails or they suddenly don't have AV. Yeah.
Yeah. And that, I owe that one to you actually, because I've, you know, for years and years, I have been very slide dependent, and you've helped me wean myself off of that. And I gave a talk in Cleveland once, and my AV completely failed. So I had the slides from my laptop, so I knew what I was going to say, but no one could see them. And if I had not figured this out ahead of time, that would have been a complete disaster. So you have to be able to give the talk without slides.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, I know that we've kind of it's an impressionistic arc to our show, darling. But you know, we've talked about, you know, making sure that you're answering a question that the audience has. We've talked a little bit about introducing a problem that they don't know about. But when you finish out the arc of that talk and you understand kind of concept to concept how it all flows together, then the slides in my mind should be a way to help cement that idea in your audience's mind. And from that perspective, I use slides apparently quite differently than a lot of people do, because everyone's always fascinated by how I use slides, because it's just, you know, I approach slides from the perspective of what I know about how people learn and about how people remember. And that has really affected the way that I put my slides together. And so, you know, I really kind of in full freenoter style, I try to make sure that, you know, yes, putting slides together helps me kind of internalize the talk, but I'm trying to put the slides together in a way that helps the audience internalize the concept from the talk, just as well as I do, because that to me is if the slides aren't helping the audience, you know, in addition to you, and perhaps even more than you, then you shouldn't be using slides.
I think the way that you use slides is fascinating. And I've seen you do, you know, half hour presentations with like 150 slides. And like, yes. I don't do that. So I'm kind of, but I think we do have a very different style there. And I've indeed seen you do talks with like 140, 150 slides. So what's wrong with you? What's your thought process?
Well, the thought process 100%, as I said before, that I start story first and not slide first. And so, I the way that I build slides is up from the big concepts. And so if I'm going to start to build a slide deck, then the first slides I build are the main points of the talk. But let me back up a little bit, because I think there's really, when it comes down to it, when you're talking about, you know, how is it that people learn and they remember? I really think there's three things that guide why I build my slides the way that I do. And the first thing is that, you know, one of the primary ways that people remember is that they have to connect things to things that they already know. And so, you know, there's lots of stats out there about like people remember pictures more than words, and that, you know, and a lot of that has been used to justify the use of slides. But what I see people use a lot of is a whole bunch of different images that are only vaguely connected to what they're talking about. And so what you end up with is kind of like pretty slideshow, but it doesn't do anything. And so one of the very first things that I try to do is to associate every concept that I'm talking about with some kind of iconic image. Because I want to say, hey, if I'm talking about this thing, I'm going to put this image up on screen and I want you to remember that. So for instance, you know, when I'm talking to people about my process for creating messages, you know, the red thread, you know, one of the key points of that is what I call the goal. That's the audience goal. We've talked about it here on the podcast. But when I'm talking, when I put it up on screen, if I have a slide that I'm talking about it, the image I always put up on it is of a grail, of a holy grail. Because to me, that's the mental image that I want to associate with people, is like people are seeking something. They are on a quest. They're seeking a thing. What's one of the most famous quests? Seeking the holy grail, whether it's biblical or Python-esque.
I think Python-esque, always.
Let's go there. Yes, absolutely. But I'm going to use that. First of all, I'm going to connect what I'm talking about to an image, and ideally an image that may be familiar to them, even just tangentially to something that's kind of related. Because again, I'm trying to connect it to what they already know, because that is a key way that people understand information and remember it. So number one thing is connection. That's one of the key pieces of the brain. Second thing, in order with how people learn, is the ability to repeat and recall. And so one of the things that I also do that, again, seems to be somewhat different than how other people, is that I repeat images throughout my talk. So every time I talk about the goal, you're going to see that same grail image come back up.
Yeah, it's like the refrain in a musical.
Yes, absolutely. And what's cool, and as actually this was true, and you know, I'm in Hawaii. I'm in Hawaii not just to hang out, but because I'm actually here with a client. You know, I was doing a workshop on how to put conversational cases together. How do you? This was a group of startups, and it was how do you actually make the case for your business? So I was using this grail image. In the early stages of introducing these concepts, I would have the grail image, and I would say, you know, there's a text over it that says goal. But then later in the talk, I actually put the grail image back up, and I say, what is this? And they would say, that's the goal. Because again, I'm trying to make sure that they are actually learning something, like that they can recall it. In order to recall it, I have to repeat it. And so, you know, first thing is connect a concept that I'm talking about to an image. The second thing I'm always trying to do is repeat that image. Where are you going?
Somewhere else. So one of the things that I am adamant about, and I think you are too, is that neither one of us use bullet points.
No, never do. Yeah. The only time I will is when someone specifically asks for an agenda slide.
Yeah.
I'll say, all right, well, today we're going to talk about, you know, how to do this, what doesn't work, what does, and how you can do it yourself. And so even my agendas are super, super simple. And if I'm going to do an agenda, I do it less on topic, and you even heard me do it. I actually list the agenda based on the questions that section of the talk answers. What are we trying to achieve? What's going wrong? What works instead? How can you do it yourself? Because again, that it puts what I'm talking about from the perspective of the audience, and as we've talked about a lot on this show, that I think is just that mindset is really, really key to be an effective keynoter, a freenoter.
Yeah,
all of that.
all of that. And I think when you are trying to capture people's attention, you don't want to fight with that. And
no.
When you're, you know, if you have bullet points on the screen, that's what they're reading. And when they're reading it, that's fighting with your attention, right? I'm not a fan of that. Like you should be able to make your points in a way that the audience understands it and can recite it back to you without seeing bullet points, or your talk's not good.
Yeah. I mean, I've mentioned him before, but one of my former bosses, Tim Pollard, would kind of describe it this way, is that, you know, if you put all of your text on the screen, you were just basically narrating a slideshow. And if that's the case, like, why are you there?
Exactly. You know, why are you there?
Yeah. To me, the slides should do something that are fundamentally different than what you would otherwise be able to do. You should use slides for something that you otherwise wouldn't be able to do in words. And there's a quote from Chris Anderson from TED that says something along the lines of that, you know, you should use slides only when they can do something that words can't do. So it should be things like, you know, when you need to show a timeline or demonstrate a process or put someone physically in a situation. And if you don't have that ability to do that, then don't use a slide. I mean, that your words are enough.
Yeah. And when I present data, and I do a lot of talks where I'm presenting data, the goal of a slide should be that it communicates the one number or the one story. And, you know, for us that, you know, we might be showing, you know, 20 years of data on different things, but this year it's a different color, or it's called out, or it's something that is incredibly clear that this is the one thing I want you to take away from that data slide, because people, they don't grok it. You know, they don't completely understand what a slide says unless you call it out in a very, very simple way.
Yeah. And so two things on that. One is one of the things that I see people do a lot is that they title a slide, particularly if they're showing data, with what the chart is rather than what the chart shows.
100%.
And you and Edison are great about making sure that the title of the slide is actually the insight of the slide, not a description of, you know, the demographics or whatever. You're basically saying, this is the point you should take away. And I think that's so important when you're putting something up on screen is the if it's words, then the meaning of the words need to further the message of your talk. It shouldn't just be like, hey, like, here's this thing and this is what we're describing. It's like, listen, you are already distracting them from you by putting that slide up. So if they're going to read it, it sure is shooting better be a point that you're trying to make.
Yeah. And I, you know, and I will also admit here that I took a course maybe 15 years ago, from Edward Tufte. I have all four of his books, you know, probably the greatest mind in terms of visualizing data in America. And, you know, I learned an awful lot about that. Like when you visualize data, it has to illuminate and not just illustrate. And yeah. if it doesn't illuminate, then do something else. And one of the things that I really learned from him, and I think you have a different take on this too with handouts, is that if the data is too complex for a graph, then just hand out a table.
Exactly. Yeah. And don't try to make the slide do it. I think, you know, I was able to find that quote from Chris Anderson, and what he says is, the main purpose of visuals can't be to communicate words. Your mouth is perfectly good at doing that.
Right.
It's to share things your mouth can't do so well. Photographs, video, animations, key data. And so, you know, for me, as I'm going through and if I'm trying to either help myself or somebody else to figure out what should get a slide, there's really two questions to put in play. One is, where are the places where you could show the audience the concept and not just tell them about it? And secondly, the other time to think about is, what would be a visually interesting but concrete way to do that? So for instance, you know, we talked previously about, when talking about the audience's problem, we talked about the duck bunny, right? And it's like, I can describe it, but you really have to see it. So like, that's a time when I need to show the duck bunny in order to make that point. But there's another way that I present that, and I think I may have mentioned it in that show, where to present that same concept of kind of two perspectives on the same situation, I talk about you know, I tell a story about Salvador Dali seeing a picture of Mae West and then turning that picture of Mae West into a painting of her face as an apartment.
I love that.
And then like 50 years later, he decides to actually build the apartment so that like he makes it 3D that gets installed in his museum. But at his museum, it's possible to enter that room from the side and totally miss how everything lines up to see her face. Now, I could describe that, but like the whole series of images of like, let me show you the original photo still, like the still that Dali saw. And then I replaced that still with the picture of it with his painting. And then I replaced the painting with the physical space. And then in the most expensive stock photograph I have ever purchased, and I did purchase this from Getty Images, was the view of that room from the side. And it lands like just beautifully because that's one of those things like my illustration that is so visual that I can describe it, but the power of actually seeing it is super powerful. And that's when you should use a visual, not because you're like, hey, I'm saying this thing, so let me also put this thing up on screen. Except in one key exception, and there's one time where I will repeat what I'm saying on screen. And you and I take two different approaches to this, but I think they're both equally valid.
Well,
and that is when we're making our main point. So talk about what you do on that often.
Yeah. I mean, when I'm making my main point, I will put up a completely black slide because I want people looking and listening to me. And I feel like that serves my point better. And I think, you know, that's the thing that I think has worked really, really well for me, even when I'm making a data point. I will have shown the data slide earlier, but when I want something to really, really land, I put up a completely black slide, no logo, no nothing, because I want people looking at me.
You have to warn the AV folks that you're going to do that, though.
Or oh,
they,
yeah.
Like, 100%. Have freaking heart attacks. They're like, oh, my God, did the projector go down? And it's actually, I got some feedback one time from Steve Garfield of stevegarfield.com, where he, as an audience, we do love Steve, but he was so traumatized by the fact that I went to a black slide because he, on my behalf, was concerned that the slides, like the projector had failed, that actually I never go to a completely black slide. I go to what I call a neutral slide. So it's very clear that there's still something on the screen, but there's really nothing to look at. So one of the things that is a hallmark of my slides is that I use in key moments, I use a texture behind it. So if it's my main red thread talk, because I'm talking about labyrinths and mazes, there's like a maze texture behind things. In my getting the green light talk, there's a circuit board texture behind it. So what I'll do if I'm going to kind of one of those dark slides is I'll go to a dark gray version of that texture so that people can still see that there's something on the slide, but that it's not gone completely black. I mean, your mileage may vary. I didn't want to like send people into palpitations when I went to a dark slide. So I decided to kind of create that neutral slide option. But what I do on those big points, and a lot of it's because, you know, I'm often speaking to marketing audiences about marketing or branding or about messaging. I'm also often speaking to audiences that are fairly active and social. So instead of going to a black slide, what I make sure that I do is that I put my main key, you know, my main points. And then, you know, we can talk about this at various points, but there's usually five key points in my talks. And those slides, those have those key points on them in its cleanest voice and cleanest arrangement possible. So for instance, in my getting the green light, the kind of like central truth of that talk is that pain is the enemy of long-term change. So I have this super graphic slide that goes up at the time that those words come out of my mouth, for the express purpose. And I'm very clear on this, that at that moment that I land that massive point, that people will take a picture of what I have to say is a very pretty slide, and share it.
Yeah.
And that's the point, is because for me, as a free noter or a T&E noter, it's actually really important that people see not only that, hey, I speak on stage, but from a picture of what somebody shares of me, they get some sense of what I talk about. And so to have a very clear, extraordinarily legible, I mean, I think that my font size on those slides is like 122. It's big. But I can also only ever like squeeze 8 words on. That's a very conscious choice for me, that those slides are treated A, differently, and B, that's the one time that I'll repeat what I'm saying, because I want to make sure that people quote it correctly. And you run into this at Edison oftentimes too, where you guys are trying to make sure that you all, I should say, are trying to make sure that people are citing things correctly. And so that's another reason, I think, right, where you title things in a very specific way. On your
slides. Our slides are very prosaic, I would say. They say exactly what you see on the slide. If a slide shows that a number has increased by 20%, the title of the slide will be "This number increased by 20%. And we'll also, when we're doing a webinar or something, we will tweet out exactly that text. But one of the things that a visual does, though, and this is something that you do, it's a story you tell, actually, about Florence Nightingale. And, I think Florence Nightingale made the greatest data chart of all time.
Oh, she did.
She was besides being a nurse, she really is the mother of statistics, in a lot of ways, and data science.
And visual storytelling, particularly.
And, she made a chart, it's called a Coxcomb chart, which illustrated the deaths caused in the Crimean War because of sanitation. And it's one of the most powerful visuals in all of history. And sometimes you just need that visual.
Yeah. It just goes back to what Chris Anderson said. Sometimes images can convey something that your words simply can't. And so, for me, my slides, like I said, I always build my talks story first and not slide first. And that's because I want my slides to be supportive and complementary to what I say. I don't want them to compete with what I say. And so I'm always very, very conscious, even though that I, as you say, I can use even in a half hour talk, like 155 slides, which
bananas. Oh my gosh,
it terrifies meeting organizers, because they're, I don't know who at some point said that, like, you should spend 1 minute per slide. And like, who does that? I have no idea. I have meeting professionals and meeting organizers that come back to me and like, well, you have 122 slides, but you only have 30 minutes. And I'm like, don't worry. Like, some of those slides are on screen for like a half a second. It's really just like, I'm making a quick point. I'm moving on. And for me, they're meant to be a visual accompaniment to what I say. But I want to get back to this kind of treatment of these main points, because I said earlier that there are three pieces of how the brain works and remembers and learns information that are key. And I talked about the first two being connection and, repetition and recall. But the third one is what I would call rank and, order, hierarchy. And so one of the things that I do when I build a deck, and again, this is something that I have learned is different than how other people put slides decks together, but has been remarkably effective for me in getting my points across, is that I make sure that different types of information are treated differently in my deck.
That's a great point.
Here's what I mean. Like, so a lot of times people just like every slide, like every point has a different image, blah, 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 blah. But you see that doesn't work with this connection concept and this repetition recall concept I was talking about earlier. And whether people realize it or not, when you treat different types of information differently, they subconsciously start to group those pieces of information. And so this is why when I'm landing one of those main points in my talk, like, here's the goal. This is the question that we're about. How do you get the green light? That slide is treated visually differently than every other slide, except for the other ones that have a point at that level. So get the green light is treated the same way as pain is the enemy of long-term change, because those two points are equal in importance in the, and as part of my, as part of my talk goes. So, you know, so I kind of like have developed over the years, because I build my own slides. Like anytime I've tried to have someone else build my slide decks for me, I'm just, it doesn't work well.
You're crazy good at that.
You know, and I don't have any background as a slide designer. I just know what I like, and I know what works well for me. And I also am constantly tweaking my decks. I am. So if I were always had to go through a designer to do that, it would drive me nuts. But what I've realized is that over time, I've really come up with like some core slide types. And I would say that they fall into like six basic categories, you know, and one is, you know, the obvious one of kind of titles. And what I mean by titles is that there's a, you know, obviously there's a title slide at the beginning, and that should have the title of your talk. It should have ideally your contact information right up front. I like to include some image of me, up front. Right now I'm using a line drawing of me, and I'll get to why that is in the minute, but it was actually something I learned from, who we'll talk about a bit in a moment, our real hero of speaking this week, Joey Coleman, who pointed out that if you put a picture of yourself on your title slide and that is up when people are walking in the room, then they kind of, there's just the familiarity that when you come on stage, they're like, oh, that's the person. Point. They're like, oh, that's the person. So there's the title slide. So beginning slide, end slide, where I also repeat contact information. And then what I call like chapter slides. And the chapter slides may be treated slightly different than the beginning and the end, but I will treat all chapter slides the same within my talk, meaning, okay, now we're talking about substance. Now we're talking about structure. Now we're talking about support. Now we're talking about slide. Each of those are going to be treated the same way. So again, when I circle back to one of those, people are like, either consciously or not, are like, oh, great. Okay. This is an organizing slide. So titles is one. The second one I would say is a big one, is a key concept. So those main points that I was talking about, for me, it's what I call red thread statements of my talk. But I also usually have kind of a subversion, like of things that don't quite rise to that level, but are important. So let's say, you know, in the getting the green light talk, pain is the enemy of a long-term change is one of my red thread statements, but a key concept is that when two truths fight, only one wins. You know, it's an important concept for my talk, but it's not actually the main topic, but it's also like a good tweetable thing. So it gets a slide because I want people to take a picture of it. So titles, key concepts, particularly in the early days of putting a talk together, I'll have slides that are dedicated to transitions. So how I move from one point to another will often have a slide. And what I'm putting on that is, and this is a thing, again, just to credit where credit is due, learned in my time at Aratium under Tim Pollard, was voicing a likely audience question about, like, you know, that helps you move to the next point. You know, well, what does that mean? Or why doesn't that work? Or, you know, and you can phrase it as a question or you can phrase it as a statement. Here's why that doesn't work. But those transition slides, particularly in early stage of a talk, are how I start to just internalize the flow. And I'll admit, the more familiar I am with a talk, those are the first slides that get dropped out. Like, I stop using transition slides because I don't need them. And as long as I make sure that I still say the transition, then the audience doesn't need them either. And then the other kind of three quick ones is that I have what I consider to be like teaching slides, where I am kind of showing a concept and building an illustration. So let's say I've got like a Venn diagram. Those I treat all the same way. They're all designed the same way. Quotes is kind of my fifth type. I treat quotes all the same way. And it's actually really important for me to be, when I'm quoting someone else, to put that quote on screen with a picture of the person who said it, the quote and their name. Because if that doesn't happen, people tweet that it's your quote.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not your quote.
That happened
right?
to me.
So that's, yep. Yeah. So I like to be like, Jay Bear says, and so I'll put up a picture of Jay Bear and a quote and then Jay Bear, so that when people are like, they can't say, well, Tamsin said, because oftentimes I'll take a picture of it. I'm like, no, Tamsin said, Jay Bear said. So there we go. And then the last piece that I do is what I call story support. And that's where if I'm telling a story like that Mae West or Salvador Dali thing, story, like I'm putting it, these are the ones I usually are going through super fast. They're the full bleed images. They're the things that help a story come alive as I'm talking about it. If I feel that's needed.
Yeah. I once gave a talk where I quoted, Jay Bear. This is a Jay Bear quote. It's the wizard, not the wand. And somebody tweeted that and it became retweeted over and over and over as something that I said. And I actually had to reach out to Jay. I'm like, dude, I didn't say that I said it. I felt horrible about it. But the thing that I think I want to end on here is that what a slide really does in your talk is it's kind of information architecture. Mm-hmm. And what I really admire about what you do and what I've learned from you is that, you know, if there are 60 slides in my deck, they're not equal. It's not 60 equal slides. There are 3, 4, 5 that matter. And that is where I want, like, that is where I want people to focus on. And they're colored in the same way. They have the same background. They have the same font. They're very visibly keyed, in kind of an information architecture, like a UX kind of way what I want you to focus on.
Right. So you have to, you have to know what the information architecture is of your talk. What are the key points? And then what I just, you know, this has been my own way of developing a visual architecture that matches my information architecture. And you know, what that results in, kind of the free prize inside, a la Seth Godin, is that by designing my visual architecture, what I've done is actually baked into my slides a visual branding that's more powerful than any like little, you know, copyright or logo in the corner. To that point, I had I'm free noting an event in Salt Lake City later in March, and you know, they were adamant. They're like, no personal branding on the slides. Like, so they don't want any logos. They don't want any like, here's my tweet thing. And I was like, okay, fine. I'll take my Instagram thing off the corner, but my slides look so much like my slides that
100%
I can take my logo off. You would still, I think most people would admit that they would recognize my slides because there's just certain stylistic things that I have done with my slides now for literally 10 years that even though the talks change and even though, you know, those textures that I mentioned change, you know, there are certain things that are 100% solid and have been features of my slides for a decade now. And so my slides look like my slides. And, you know, some of those features are, I always use the same fonts. I've used Futura standard for 10 years. I use etching and line drawings in place of stock art. Because I just find it's a lot easier for me to find kind of creative, funny, interesting ways to illustrate things by using kind of like vintage etching, illustrations of things. And between that and then my color blocking with texture, with all those kind of big, you know, the big statement slides, I can have two different talks that are about two different things that even have two different color schemes. But they look like mine. And I think that's a really powerful thing that is this kind of extra thing that you can do with your slides that people don't even think about. And by the way, most of the time your marketing department's like slide templates are crap.
Oh yeah. That, all right. That's a whole other show.
That is a whole other show.
That's a whole other show. But I think we should move on now because you mentioned Utah.
I did.
And here's a bad segue. Or segue. Next to Utah is Colorado.
That is, yes.
And a lovely friend of ours who uses slides very well lives in Colorado, and that's Joey Coleman.
Yes, and he uses even more slides than I do, and he has his like timed down to the like millisecond. It's incredible. So what I really respect about Joey is that he does a couple things with the slides that are amazing. One is that they really are like. They move so fast that they're like they're almost like a movie with what he says.
Yeah, I can't even do that.
Yeah, he's flying through them so fast, but he knows them cold because he has just rehearsed and rehearsed and rehearsed, and he just knows all of that cold. The other thing that he does with his slides is he uses them as an opportunity to customize his talk for the audience that he's talking to. So one of the things that Joey will do is that if he can, he'll get access to the attendee list of the audience, and he'll go and he'll find images of them from social media, and that kind of at key moments in his talk, he like pops up like an image, like a montage image of images of people in the audience, and just think about the impact that has on an audience. They're like,
oh, crazy.
Whoa.
So easy to do too.
Oh yeah. And it's just like, it's so great that he just, I mean, it shows such respect for the audience, but it's also an indicator of just how hard Joey works to live to the standard of what he talks about, because what he talks about is customer experience, and particularly how, by the extent to which you can make people feel good about the decision to have purchased with you, that they will stay with you longer. He frames it in this wonderful, I just love this idea he has about the first 100 days. And he's got a great book called You'll Never Lose a Customer Again that's based on this. I mean, he lives what he's talking about. He lives this personalization. 100%. He lives that piece of it. It's just amazing.
Yeah. I saw a magician in San Francisco a couple of years ago, and he pulled me out of the audience. You know, he said that he told me where you were from. And that's so easy to do from Facebook, right?
It really is.
Like if you get someone's name, you get their social media account, and you know, he pulled me on stage and he was like, you know, doing this whole mentalism routine about, you're married, right? Yes. Your wife, she's from a beach town. Yeah. I'm seeing the East Coast. Was it Virginia Beach? And, oh, okay. And like, that's so easy to do on Facebook. It's so easy to do that work. And it makes people feel like they are seen.
Yeah. Because, I mean, to everybody else in that audience, that probably seemed like legit magic. And, yeah. You know, and it's just like, and yet you and I may know, like, okay, that was easy information to find out. But like, the point is the effect. And when you're using slides, that I think is really how we talk about all of this. It's really about, does it support the effect of what you're talking about? Does it complement the point that you're trying to make? And I just, you know, when we're talking about Joey in the context of all of this, just that personalization is amazing. But one of the things that I love about him, and I think he probably holds like the land speed record for the number of slides in.
Oh, yeah.
You know, covered in time, in a particular period of time, particularly because like kind of right towards the end of his talks, that's when he does his who he is. Like, props for not leading with who you are, because nobody gives a flying fig until you've told them something about them that they care about. Then they might listen to you. But
I've never seen a flying fig, by the way. But
I know. Well, so why would you care about it? But what Joey does is usually, from what I've seen, he does this piece about him like fairly late in his talk. And he just has this beautifully scripted, very funny kind of life story that he does. I think he can tell you it's like 90 minutes and 90 slides. I mean, 90 seconds and 90 slides. It's like boom, 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 boom.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. But it also is, you know, to Kahneman talking about the peak end effect, where, you know, people remember like the emotional peaks of an experience, and also the end, that for him to be able to finish on kind of such a funny, emotional, energetic way, in addition to just the high quality of what Joey talks about, it's just a wonderful, wonderful way to take it to use in a very good way that energy that the audience is willing to give you. And it's a beautiful example of how slides can actually help you build that energy rather than take it away.
You know what else can help you build that energy?
Cocktails?
Yes. Correct.
But isn't it cocktails technically a depressant?
No, no.
Shh. Don't speak.
Don't believe that. No. this week's pellet, and thank you, Nilofer Merchant, for the use of the word pellet, is the slide car.
That's so awesome. I wish I had a slide car. I had to make do with my slide tie.
You had a slide tie, yeah.
I had to have a Mai Tai here in Hana, Hawaii, which was delicious. And since passion fruit is in season here, it was like a passion fruit pineapple Mai Tai, and it was delicious.
I know, and I'm not having a slide car either, I have to say. But the sidecar, which we're now going to call the slide car, is it's an amazing drink. It's 2 ounces of brandy, cognac, whichever you have. It doesn't have to be fancy, but... you know, it can be E&J or it could be Hennessy. Doesn't matter. An ounce of Cointreau, which is an orange liqueur, and then a 1/2 ounce of lemon juice. And sometimes people put sugar on the rim of the glass. I don't do that, but it's shaken and strained, and it's a delightful drink. And we're gonna call it the slide car forever.
It is. Yeah. I really enjoy this drink. To me, it's a good bridge season drink. It's a good spring and fall drink because it kind of has that weightiness because, you know, I mean, between the brandy and the Cointreau, it can pack a pretty substantial punch. But the lemon juice plus the kind of orange nature of the liqueur kind of softens it. And so it's a very drinkable drink. It's one of those you kind of have to be a little careful of.
Yeah, you do, kind of.
Yeah, because it can help you slide into happiness.
Yeah, or into the Slough of Despond.
Or the Slough of Despond, but hopefully it's happiness. Yeah. That's what I'm hoping for.
Hopefully it's happiness. And this show has been happiness to me.
Aw, I love that.
I love that.
And we made it work. And so what we'll tell you is that this is about our 18th attempt tonight.
Oh my goodness. It's been horrible. Horrible. Like every tech thing has failed all night long.
It has. Oh. But you and I haven't failed, baby. We made it.
We're going to make it. We should have another cocktail. Yeah. I'm going to. But not right now because on the next episode of The Freenoter, we look at how to present insights that the audience cannot unhear.
We also look at the work of Brené Brown, who does just that, and how she makes her content so darn sticky.
And we celebrate content with a drink named after one of America's greatest content creators, The Hearst.
All that and more on the next episode of The Freenoter.
Cheers.